This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Manchester City have become a synonym for success in recent years, but that obviously hasn't always been the case. And in the 25th anniversary year of City's playoff final victory against Gillingham, we're taking a trip back to 99. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Ollie Kirsch.
And this is the City Report podcast.
It's here for Gundogan. It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, you lovely listeners, at the start of a brand new week and a week where we will eventually at the end of it get to see Manchester City back in action once again. Big title, not title deciding, but certainly a title tussle clash against Arsenal at the Etihad Stadium. But we will turn attention to that later on in the week. But to fill the international break void today, like I said in the introduction, we're going to be taking a trip back to 99. Now, to do that, a very special guest is with me, our very own Ollie Kay. Now, this sort of, I guess we'll get into it, but this episode isn't just going to be about that game against Gillingham. We'll sort of do the precursor to it and why City were in that position to begin with. But Ollie, you're going to be my eyes and ears today because I have zero recollection of this match. I have zero recollection of this season because I was merely a twinkle in the sky. I know you weren't quite as mature as you are now. How old were you in this particular campaign?
I was a young lad, yeah. But these were my formative City years. My very first memory of City was that day at Wembley.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'd been to Main Road. My dad first took me to Main Road when I was three. Got my season ticket in the 98 season when I was four. But like anything, isn't it? The most special days are the ones when you're a kid that tend to be, what's the word for it? When something's a, core memory. That's the word.
Core memory. I wondered where you were going there.
Yeah, is these those things when you're a kid, isn't it, that tends to be a core memory? Mm. I've got fleeting memories of the journey down, of the day, being on Wembley Way at 90 minutes, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah, we'll get into all of that.
Yeah, and the next few years as a City fan, you know, we didn't have too much to celebrate, so I did spend a lot of my childhood looking back on adult VHS tapes. I had a VHS taped recording of that game from when it was broadcast, old programs, books. I dwelled on it for a while because between then and the late 2000s, we didn't really have much to celebrate. Mm. So, Yeah, you know, I've always had the yellow and black kit. Depending on my weight and size, I tend to pick up the new replicas as and when they're released by the stores. That for me is like my founding moment and founding day as a Blue. So really excited to get into this.
Yeah, for sure. I know a lot of prep has gone into it on your side, so we'll get going in a sec. But and I know everyone's journey is obviously different, and for a lot of what's the term nowadays, legacy fans, this is a game, a season, a part of City's history that will resonate. For a lot of people who, you know, including myself, who started supporting the club after that, be that, you know, when they were born in whatever year, right up until the modern day success, it's probably something that's known in terms of people know that City came from behind and beat Gillingham, and it was a massive game for the club. But I guess the nitty gritty, and even on my side, the stuff that I've reading through your show notes, I've been like, oh my God, I had no idea. So without any further ado, then let's begin and let's pick up the story almost at the top of the mountain of City's previous era of success, I guess, because I always find, much to contrary opinion, that City, when and in context of this conversation, when City said, oh, you know, the boys from Division 2, they worked the way up, they won the Champions League, that's kind of a bit false, isn't it? Because City were not the most successful, not even probably top three, top four most successful, but they were a successful club in England. And of people of a certain vintage, even going beyond this, will remember City as, you know, the team who won league titles, who played in Europe, etc., etc. So, yeah, obviously you weren't born at the time either, but try and take us back to there if we can.
Yeah, so City were going before the Premier League, of which City were a founding member, but City were a major football club in England, full stop, right? City had been around since the very late 1800s, becoming City in 1894. We were the first Manchester team to win a trophy.
Getting that in there early.
Yeah, this is all going to be City, and there isn't going to be too much Berting in here, so I'll get that in. But City, I mean, so for example, right, let's look at the maths. In the early 80s, the club had more top flight points accumulated over its history than both Manchester United and Chelsea. Fun little fact there. Most listeners won't know that already. It wasn't until the 80s that United took over from City in total top flight points. City were perennial top flight contenders. We had a golden era in the late 60s and early 70s. We won the league. We won the European Cup Winners' Cup. It's now defunct. But, you know, people might shit on that now, but that was...
I guess the comparison would be the Conference League, which popped up a little bit with in the last year or so. Not necessarily direct, but similar sort of prestigiousness.
Yeah. It wasn't... it's a similar prestigiousness in a sense. It was still an inferior, and it wasn't the European Cup, but it was a respected European trophy. Maybe even more comparable with the Europa League these days in terms of reputation.
But I guess you had the UEFA Cup eventually, didn't you? Which was literally carried over.
Became the Europa League. So, yeah, anyway, City were a perennial top flight club, barring, which was very much normal in those days, even for the biggest clubs, to go down, come back up, have dark spells, have golden eras. And we were sixth. So in 1984, we were sixth in that all-time list. And the names ahead of us wouldn't be easy to guess. I know you've read it, so I would have asked you, but I'll read it out. So the top was Everton, which is quite incredible. If there are, by any chance, any Everton fans listening to this, you should absolutely have a look at that, because it wasn't until, I think, the very late 80s or early 90s that Liverpool overtook Everton. But anyway, so we were sixth in all-time points won. Everton, Villa, Liverpool, Arsenal and Sunderland. So some clubs missing from that list, right, that people would have ahead of City in history, big clubs. You're thinking your Newcastles, you're thinking Man United, you're thinking Tottenham. It wasn't the case. There's a fallen giant there in Sunderland. City became a fallen giant. Everton have so far avoided relegation.
Certainly falling, though, I think. It's
certainly falling, yeah. They've been swirling around the toilet, you might say, for quite a while. It's only really Liverpool and Arsenal that have completely avoided any jeopardy whatsoever. So City are historically and were historically a big club. So what was to follow in the 80s and 90s was shocking, unprecedented in many senses.
No, I know that is certainly a good place to start, and I guess we can sort of move into that modern era, which I guess for some people will say City were invented in 2008. For others, our City neighbours, they'd say football was invented in 1992, because the Premier League changes everything, really, doesn't it? And we've seen with United and their success, we spoke about on this show before, when Sky Sports came along and Murdoch had the dollar and the carrot was dangled in front of the Premier League owners, the breakaway league was started. You know, United went off and almost monopolised it for, well, they did monopolise it for a good chunk of time. What happened to City in those sort of spells then? Obviously, we've given the context that City were once upon a time a big club and had the success. That obviously went the opposite way quite quickly.
Yeah, what happened? Well, it was fairly normal. Again, like I said, it wasn't unusual for clubs to rise and fall. Even big clubs, they would usually end up somewhere back near the top, but it wasn't abnormal. So City in the 80s were relegated, came back up. In the early 90s, Peter Reid, we finished fifth twice under Peter Reid in two successive seasons, 91 and 92. But then, as we see today, most clubs get relegated at some stage, right? Even the old giants, you're thinking City, we were probably the first victims of that with the Premier League. Leicester won the league a few years ago, won the Premier League a few years ago, have been relegated since. Leeds, massive club back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, relegated. Forest, they've been relegated. In fact, the only clubs that were founding members of the Premier League that have never been relegated are Arsenal, Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, United, and Spurs. So what happened? 1996, huge squad changes. We lost a lot of players. We brought in a lot of young players. Alan Ball, not the greatest. And I know there's a line dedicated to him in the Wonderwall song. But he wasn't the greatest. Main Road, look, legendary ground. I've spoken about it many times. But as lovable as it was rotting, right? It was akin to what we're seeing
almost
with Old Trafford today.
Leaky
roof and, Burning Point number two. Similar to what we look at Old Trafford as today, right? We had financial troubles as well. So in 1996, City dropped. But unlike the previous occasions where we've been relegated, for example, in the late 80s, there was the feeling that it could be a little more fatal. Because of what was happening with the Premier League and the disparity, it was beginning to form. That difference between the Premier League powers and the leagues below was really starting to ingratiate itself. And that was kind of where typical City started, right? In 1996, that season was where it really became etched into City folklore and into City fans. We talked a few weeks ago about Sven, that 07-08 season, maybe being the end of at least that phase of typical City. 1996 was the beginning of it. Just to take listeners back, and again, many won't know this story, and it's incredible.
So funny. A chunk of people who are very aware and lived through it and have probably said every expletive under the sun since because of this and blame a lot of their life troubles on it. But at the same time, there'll be people who have never heard it, and it is wonderful. So yeah, take it away.
Yeah. Just for we had seen some typical City before, right? It was already there, kind of lingering in the club's background. For example, City remain, even now, the only English club to have won the league title and then been relegated the following season.
You'll never
We won the league in 1938. We were relegated in 1939. And the kicker on that, in the 1939 season when we were relegated, we were also the highest scoring team. We were the defending champions with the best firepower in the league. We scored 80 goals compared to Arsenal, who were the champions, 77, and we still went down. So even throughout history, I mean, you could even go back to the Billy Meredith bribe scandal. There's always been some shambolic elements to Manchester City Football Club, often in hilarious fashion.
Making failure stylish in a way.
In a sense, yeah. But this is, 96 was kind of where it became unfunny, in a sense. And yes, now in hindsight, it is absolutely hilarious. But this was the start. So, okay, final day of the season in 1996. City are at home to Liverpool, who've already secured third place. They can't move up. They can't move down. Their season's done. The players in the mines are on the beach, as we say. City are in the relegation zone.
It meant
zone.
More to them, though, this game, didn't it?
It always means more. Always means more. Bert number three. So all we've got to do to stay up is better our relegation rivals' results, one of which was Southampton. So the score's 2-2 at Main Road after City had come back from 2-0 down. Again, just another little bit of typical City. We'd gone 2-0 down, but we did manage to drag it back. Always do things the hard way. So the feeling in the ground is that City need a goal, but then something changes. Something changes. All of a sudden, in the main stand, there are jubilant scenes. Somebody in the crowd has spread the word. Now, remember, we didn't have push notifications. There weren't mobiles. You used to see, and I do remember this as a kid, you used to see around Main Road people that had little handheld radios.
Yeah.
And they'd be holding them to their ears, listening to the scores around the grounds while we were playing. So somebody in the crowd, their maths wasn't mathsync. And they've spread the word that because of results elsewhere, a draw will be enough. It filters down to the City bench. And there are videos of this. It's absolutely fucking remarkable. It's unbelievable. So Alan Ball and the City dugout and the rest of the dugout catch wind of it. So the players start receiving the instructions. The subs are up and down. The coaching staff are up and down the touchline. Hold the ball. We're safe. We're safe. Just see the game out. Waste time. Fine. So the seconds are ticking down. City are doing beautifully, right? Passing it around the back, keeping the ball in the corner. And then something changes again. Whoever had spread the word with the little handheld radio hadn't done the maths right. City need
so
a goal.
Cringy. It's so cringy.
City need a goal. We've just wasted the dying minutes of the dying game of the season to stay up. And we've got it wrong. We need a goal. But it's too late. City have hilariously and shambolically and tragically wasted time to secure their own fate. The final whistle blows and City are gone. City are down. And that is, again, listeners, there are videos on YouTube of the game. There are comedy sketches and skits on what happened in the game. And it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like seeing a mouse running into a mouse trap and then just sort of flailing away, having on their own accord. You know, they've gone for a piece of cheese and suddenly the next thing you know, they're playing in the second tier. I mean, it's utterly remarkable. And this is still, what are we now? Just under sort of 30 years, I guess, since this went on. So it's still relatively new. You know, Premier League was in its early years, but it was still a Premier League fixture and we're seeing stuff like this. Truly bonkers. But as you say, City down in the division. And I guess it wasn't necessarily uncommon at that point for City to be up and down, but this doesn't necessarily go the way it had done the other year. City don't come back up. In fact, they go further down.
Not yet. Not yet. We did. In the end, we had two seasons in the second tier. So what we now know is the Championship, what was then Division One. But yeah, the warning signs were there, and they were there as soon as we went down. So this is the banter era on steroids. This is where it really starts to kick in. So Alan Ball is trusted with bringing City back up. Remember, he just relegated us, but, you know, calm. Everyone stay calm. Alan Ball stays in. And he's allowed the transfer window in the summer. He's allowed to regroup, you know, and try and get the club back up. Opening three games of the season in Division 1 / Championship / second tier. Two defeats in the opening three games, and he's sacked. Unbelievable disorganisation and lack of foresight by the club. You know, you say we're going to stick with this guy. You give him the transfer budget in the summer. Three games later, he's sacked. Okay. So then comes a caretaker manager, Asa Hartford. Might be remembered by some City fans, maybe around my age. He was a reserve manager for City for quite a while. But he was Alan Ball's assistant. He takes over as caretaker manager. Three wins and three losses in the September. Decent form. He's then got rid of. Steve Coppell comes in from Palace. After 6 games and 33 days, Steve Coppell resigns.
33 days. That's just there's no point in glossing over that. That's a month. He was manager for a month.
It's a month. 6 games, just over 1 month, and he's gone. So we're now on our... So that's 3 managers gone. We're in September or October. Okay, here's Phil Neal, caretaker manager number 2, manager number 4. It's November. City then lose 7 of the next 10 games. They include losses to Tranmere Rovers and Oxford United. City are in the bottom half. He's got rid of. Christmas. former Nottingham Forest manager Frank Clark is appointed. Finally, the managerial merry-go-round is done, at least for the season. Manager number 5, not even New Year's Day, right? Manager number 5. And the rest of the season was just similar. You know, it was drab, it was fairly poor, decent pockets of form, and we finished mid-table, banging mid-table at 14th. So that was 96. 97-98 season. The thinking again in the Premier League era is not uncommon to say that teams that go down will come back up because of bigger fan base, bigger revenues, ability to sign better players, etc. And City are, again, a fallen giant. So 97-98 rolls around. The bookies have City as second favourites to win the division and almost nailed on to come back up to the Premier League, whether in first, second or through the playoffs. But the banter just continued, right? Georgie Kinkladze, cult hero, terrace hero, star boy, crashes his Ferrari and injures his back. The supporters then start an open rebellion. 16 games, 3 wins. We're in the relegation zone. Francis Lee, of course, one of our legends with Mike Summerby and Colin Bell, our own holy trinity from the golden era. He's our chairman at this point. The fans are calling for his head. Eventually, he did resign as City headed towards the run-in, staring at oblivion.
Which was quite bleak, wasn't it? Obviously, he wasn't there at the time, but it felt like putting down an old favourite family dog, in a sense, because it's worth mentioning at this point to go back and back and back, but Francis Lee was dubbed, maybe not a saviour, but he was welcomed into the club, having the previous ownership, having sort of, again, been ousted.
Yeah, he was. He was welcomed as a hero. He was welcomed as a hero, and we've seen it. We see it with other clubs, you know, when club legends come back in one capacity or another, either they come back to play and finish the career or they come back as managers. Bert number 4, ding, ding, ding. You think about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Man United, right? The guy clearly didn't have the capability to do what United fans wanted him to do, but he's welcomed in as a hero. And then it's quite painful to be calling for the head of a legend like that. And it's another point entirely, but partly why I don't want Vincent Kompany back as a manager. So Franny Lee, yeah, things are all going wrong with Franny. The club, the fans have turned against him. So in the February, Frank Clark is sacked and Joe Royal comes in. And just to switch City fans' minds now, because where we are in the present, you know, you have to think back. These are some of the results from that season that I want to call out. A 1-1 draw at home at Main Road to Bury.
Yeah, they went out of business, didn't they? And they're now a Phoenix club, but traditionally have been sort of League One, League Two throughout most of the history.
Yeah, a 3-1 loss away to Stockport.
Shout out my brother Morris, season ticket holder at Edgeley Park, but they are still in League Two. They are on a bit of a promotion push at the moment, it has to be said.
The return leg at Bury, 1-0 away loss, and a 2-0 loss at home to Oxford United.
League One at the moment. I think to be fair, Oxford United were maybe up and down a little bit. I think they had a first division stint way back, but again, another team who have been pretty much League One, League Two for most of their Football League history.
Yep, and again, in the minds of City fans going back to that time, City have been a perennial top-tier club with great attendances, with some money to burn, and we're now facing results like picking up 1 point out of 6 against Bury, losing away to Stockport, losing at home to Oxford United. You can only imagine how the long-time loyal City fans, and the City fans that had lived through that golden era, what they were now thinking. So in the end, that season, we were expected to secure our return to the Premier League and we dropped again. That was it. It was official, right? The lowest point in Manchester City's history. Fact. Objectively, the lowest point in the club's history. We were the first, another fact for you, the first English side ever with a European trophy to its name. Remember we mentioned the Club Winners' Cup, The first ever English side with a European trophy to its name to drop down to the third tier of its national pyramid, and only the second European side ever to do so. I think it's FC Magdeburg in Germany also done so.
Yeah.
So, younger listeners, this one's for you, right? People say, look at where City would be without the money. We were trophyless, yes, for a few decades, but this club is and was a perennial giant in English football. What had just happened to the club in that 97-98 season, being relegated to the third tier, now League One, was unprecedented in England and in most, bar one, of Europe. Mm. So here we are.
Yeah, that sets the scene, doesn't it? What, about 25 minutes in? Less whistle stop, more very, very detailed, which is absolutely fantastic. You've got a brain teaser, haven't you?
I have, listeners.
During the advertisement break. Which three clubs did City share the 98-99 Division 2 season with that are also in the Premier League this season? Listeners, after the break, we'll be taking a look at that season, obviously leading up to the final, the playoff final against Gillingham at Wembley at the end of it, and everything else in between.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Our Manchester and our city, the centre of music, culture and history, the Hacienda to Oasis, Northern Soul to the Smiths, all good things make a comeback. Whether it's a retro kit or a bucket hat, a comeback is about passion, mentality and resilience. Sprinkle in some luck, skill and individual brilliance. Together, you get the perfect recipe. We fought to the end all through our history, but 25 years is one of the biggest comebacks we've ever won. That game would promote us to Division 1, 2-0 down as the clock ticks. Up till the 89th minute with a Horlock kick, then it happened. That magical moment. The moment that silences the opposition opponent. Paul Dickhoff strikes in stoppage time. Top right-hand corner in his prime. And that image is photographic, turning that kit into a certified classic.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast. What you've just heard there is a wonderful poem by The Chubby Northerner. Now, if you're not already acquainted, make sure to go and check out their work. Links in the description of this show, as per usual. Wonderful stuff. Leads nicely then onto that fateful 1998-1999 season. Now, before the break, we asked which three Premier League teams were in the Division 2 at that time with Manchester City. Ollie? The answer?
Fulham, Bournemouth and Burnley.
Esteemed company. Fellow giants of the game, and by giants, obviously, less so. Let's begin then. 1998-1999, now remembered incredibly fondly by City supporters, maybe not for the right reasons, but certainly for reasons nonetheless, and a reason we're doing this podcast today, and it's been listened to people by all over the globe. What happens? Why is it important? And how did City, again, quickly get themselves in this position?
Okay, quick recap. Fallen giants, Man City have landed in Division 2. The mood around the club, around Main Road, is dire. It's shocking. Terrace hero King Cladsey, always remembered fondly by everyone except Joe Royal. You can go back and read his quotes on Kinky. Royal sold him that summer. And even though Royal hadn't been able to stop the decline and stop the rot at the end of the relegation season, he did keep his job. Main Road is still falling apart, just falling apart a little bit more than it was a couple of years prior. And what we didn't know at the time, and now we do because of quotes from our skipper at the time, Andy Morrison, is that if City hadn't come back up and regained the second tier revenues, we were at real risk of liquidation entirely. Amos, I know you've got the quote. I asked my dad as well how he was feeling ahead of that season.
But they said, we knew we were too good for that division. The pain it was potentially having to wait another year. Quite poignant now, it has to be said, sort of hearing it back.
Yeah. So it wasn't all terrible. There were at least feelings that City were fated to come back up in one way or another. But maybe, you know, we might look back at that now and say, that's a bit of entitlement, isn't it? Nobody's entitled to a place in English football, and we say that a lot. But anyway, so typical City strikes again. 19th of December 1998, so we're halfway through that season. And here comes the infamous York away fixture for, again, the newer fans and for the people on football Twitter. York away, what do they say? They say it's either Main Road Twitter or York away Twitter for that contingent of of legacy City fans. City played York away. We lost 2-1. So if that season was the lowest season in our history, that day was the lowest day in our history. City, on Christmas Day in 1998, had 22 games played, 7 wins, 9 draws and 6 losses, 13th in the third tier of English football. That is our lowest ever position in English football. Between mid-September and the York away game, City had 3 wins in 15 games. Right, the situation, Amos, was fucking dire. It was awful. The only thing that had changed that maybe wasn't in trend with City of that era is the new chairman, David Bernstein. He'd taken over from Franny Lee when Franny decided to resign the previous season. And he went against the fans, actually. He stuck with Joe Royal. Because remember, it wasn't just that season that the fans had against Royal. It was the fact that he couldn't stop the rot the prior season and keep us up. So Royal's taken us down. Royal's now got us sat in 13th in the third tier. But he survives. Maybe, you know, he just had a determination to run things differently from Francis Lee. So I don't know if you've got anything to say on that, but that is, you know, objectively the lowest point that this club had ever found itself in.
It's almost impossible to sort of visualise now, even for those who lived through it and grew up in the shadow of this and experienced it. The football club that we turn up to every weekend, and, you know, the glitz and the glam of the Etihad Stadium and this wonderful new stadium in East Manchester, which, you know, maybe one day we will do a feature on itself, because there's some interesting stories about that as well. But, you know, the global brand of Manchester City, I'm just seeing online now, tickets for the US tour have gone on sale, and the starting sort of retailing about $200, I think it is, or something like that. I'm seeing prices, you know, astronomical prices for a pre-season friendly. At this time, you'd be lucky if you had $200, 200 quid sat in the budget for sort of wages, and, you know, obviously you'd get paid, but after that, it was crazy. Absolutely bonkers.
Fans didn't stop turning out, though.
They didn't.
That's the thing. Fans did not stop turning out. So I've done some numbers on this. And this is where we've got, of course, another myth out, right? This thing about City fans, loyalty, plastics, empty seats, blah, blah, blah. City's average attendance in that 98-99 season was just over 28,000. That's an increase on the season before's average attendance, which was in the second tier, and an increase on all four of our Premier League campaigns between 92 and 96. We were finishing fifth in the Premier League, and we still had lower attendances than we did in the third tier. So without the numbers, as City's league status went down, as we dropped down the pyramid, attendances went up. And it was a higher average attendance than every Championship side that season, except Sunderland.
Wow. That's it's hard to visualize, because I don't, I, obviously, if City went down now, then maybe it would be the case. But I think football's changed so much since then. We do see teams drop down the pyramid, but I don't know if there's a sort of a certain apathy in sort of those lower league games. But it'd be hard to imagine that happening now. But at the time, it was still, you know, I don't know. You tell me, was it sort of seen as unusual, City getting these crowds in Division Two, or was it just sort of, you know, they're the City fans, that's what they do?
It was a bit of both. I mean, if you watch some commentary from all games, you go back and you watch, there are snippets. They do the rounds on Twitter quite regularly of commentators calling it out, talking about the loyalty of City fans, what City fans had stuck through, what they went through. And we still see it now. You do get a lot of City fans talking about how great it would be if we were relegated because of the 1-1-5. You've got a lot of City fans who've given up the tickets because of whether it's pricing, whether it's just because, you know, they can't get the passion for it anymore that they used to, whatever reason might be. It's not unusual to say, yeah, I'd actually really fucking enjoy that.
No, for sure.
I'd love another York away. I'd love another, you know, Oxford at home or Bury at home. Maybe it's partly nostalgia, and you know, you do look at this through rose-tinted glasses and forget again just how dire the situation was for the club. But there is certainly a core cohort of Manchester City fans that will turn out no matter what. No matter what. And there are even some that will be more inclined to turn out the worse it gets, just out of pure love and support for the club. I'm sure every club has that. Absolutely.
No, sure.
But City's, by comparison, is big in numbers. That core group of support is big. Because again, you look historically at the kind of attendances. You look at, you know, historically Liverpool's attendances when they went down, United's attendances when they went down. They were similar and if not sometimes worse than what City were pulling in that third tier. So, yeah, one to think about with fans.
Yeah, and look, this unfortunately won't be going out to the masses in terms of the football world, but it is worth remembering when people give the jibes at the Etihad and the City fan base. And a weird one that started popping up, I've started seeing, is all City fans are from London. I've seen a few people say that to me lately. You know, there's plenty of City fans from London. I know loads who are sort of home and away at times, up and down the country, coming to the Etihad, putting in the miles. But it's almost flipped, hasn't it? Because that, for me growing up, and obviously you as well, Ollie, in Manchester, it was almost United fans are the ones from outside of Manchester. I don't know. I'm going off on a tangent there anyway. But let's go back to football, because we attribute City in the current form to these, and we're hopefully going to be seeing one as we sort of go into football after the international break. But these mega winning runs that, you know, City go on 20 games unbeaten, etc., etc., they kind of maybe had their formative period as a sort of City thing going back to this season, obviously in a much different way, but going on a strong run of form in the running isn't something that City have only picked up under Guardiola.
No, it happened that season. Despite the fans' wishes, despite the sentiment around the club, Royal survived. Joe Royal was allowed to stay on and turn it around, and we did. The run of form after Christmas was unbelievable. So between Christmas Day, so just after the York away fixture, and the end of the season, I don't know what was in those mince pies, but City recorded just two losses between Christmas Day and the end of the season. So we finished third in the end, 5 points shy of automatic promotion, which is a great shame because you think about some of those dreadful results and dreadful losses that season, and that could have been automatic, but then we wouldn't have had the moments that we did get. So
true.
City finished third and we go into the playoffs, and the first tie is against sixth place Wigan, our greater Manchester rivals. Squeaky bum time. Now, unlike City and unlike most, you know, similar to most teams in that division, Wigan had never been in the top flight at that time. Again, some slightly younger listeners, maybe around my age or your age, will remember Wigan in the Premier League. At that time, they had never been higher than the third tier, right?
So Simple win, surely.
Yeah, got to be. Fallen giant versus small club, right? No, it wasn't going to be the case. But still, City had beaten Wigan, both home and away. The first tie was one of the few positive results that we had in the first half of the season, and we beat them in the return game later on in the season. But you know, playoffs are playoffs. Everything's on the line, right? For City, this is a case of fallen giant trying to start a hopeful march back to the top flight. But for Wigan, it meant everything as well. For them, it was an opportunity for them to get their first ever promotion to Division One / Championship / second tier. Never quite sure what terminology to use here. But yeah, this was an opportunity for them for their first ever promotion to the second tier. So first leg was away in Wigan. These are phenomenal pictures. These are amazing. It's if you so go funny. Go on Google Images, unbelievable. Go on Google Images, have a look. City fans that couldn't get tickets to Wigan away were treated to a live broadcast from Main Road. So they had a big screen sat in front of the kipax.
In quotation marks, it has to be said.
Yeah, yeah, big screen opposite the kipax. Yeah, a big screen then wasn't what we know a big screen to be now, right? So you think about now at the Etihad. Yeah, now whenever you're wherever the Etihad, wherever you sat, you can see what's going on those big screens. It wasn't like that. This was, I don't know, you know, whether it was 80-inch, 90-inch, 100-inch, but back then, unless the club was willing to literally spend millions, which it didn't have, there ain't no Megatron, right? So there were fans in the main stand that were using binoculars to watch the TV, watch that live broadcast. But the main stand was packed. It's incredible. You have to go and look at pictures from that day. It's absolutely phenomenal. So anyway, the game finished at 1-1 at Wigan, and it set up the second leg at Main Road. Cometh the hour, feed the goat, Sean Goater. 27th minute strike, that strike in inverted commas, was the only goal of the game. Fun fact, he scored past Roy Carroll, the Wigan keeper, who was future Man United goalkeeper. But
famed for
wasn't.
His mishap against Tottenham Hotspur, if I remember correctly, where he
the goal that never was,
where he stopped the ball going over the line while simultaneously being about 5 meters over the line itself.
Oh yeah, dude was practically in his own net, and the goal wasn't given. Yeah. Another one to go and look up at YouTube. We're gonna have to put a little list in the description of all the content and the essential reading.
What's it called? Bibliography.
So. That one still wasn't simple. I said a strike in inverted commas. Wigan players are up in arms saying it came off Goater's arm. There was no VAR back then. Even now, because of how shite the camera quality was and the frame rate, it's actually impossible to tell whether or not it came off Goater's arm. Again, search City v Wigan playoff semi-final. I've gone back and looked at it in preparation of this episode, and I genuinely cannot tell if it was off the goat's arm or chest. I'm not Burting here. I don't know. Anyway, the goal was given, and that was it. City were going to Wembley, and Gillingham had won the other semi-final. Similar to Wigan, Gillingham had never been higher than the third tier. In fact, Gillingham, until after the Second World War, were mainly in the Southern League.
Yeah,
so
regional,
not
so
even,
basically non-league.
Much of their history had been spent in non-league, and they had been up and down since then. But the dynamics were very, very similar, right? It was a fallen giant looking to get themselves back into the top tier, up against another club looking for their first ever appearance in the second tier. So in the run-up to the game, again, it's not like today. You can't go online and queue up for tickets in a virtual queue, or it's not released by criteria. It was City made the announcement, tickets are on sale from the Main Road ticket office at this time on this day. First come, first serve.
Yeah, your dad, again, shout out, throwing in some wonderful anecdotes for us to sort of paint the picture. He said, the biggest memory I have, aside from the game itself, was getting tickets for the match. Got up at 5 a.m, headed to Main Road to join what was already a massive queue. We then joined the queue at about 5:30 a.m. We were already as far back as the left corner of the main stand. The map of the queue was entry into the ground on the kipax side, through all the concourses leading back to the main stand, and then back out of the car park, the ticket office windows, towards the ticket office windows. Finally got our tickets about 11:30 a.m. So that's a good, what are we talking
six
there?
Hours?
6 hour stint in the queue. Jesus.
So demand, right? So City packed out Wembley. The ones that couldn't get tickets were packing out London. It was City's first Wembley appearance in 18 years.
Was it so, the cup final in
82? 81. So City had two trips back then. FA Cups that ended up, and FA Cup finals that ended in a draw would go to a replay I know we moan a lot about Wembley being the semi-final and the final now, but imagine if you had to go back again for another final. Anyway, City lost in the 81 Cup final replay against Spurs. That was our last notable appearance at Wembley, I'll say. My dad has also asked me to mention City's loss against Chelsea at Wembley.
Yeah. What was the name of the competition?
Oh, the God. Full Members Cup.
Full Members Cup, yeah.
Full Members Cup.
Yeah. I've been told about that one plenty of times. Yeah.
I'll leave listeners to Google it, but in the mid-80s, Full Members Cup was in replacement of European trophies because English clubs couldn't compete in Europe at the time. So aside from what is now kind of consigned to history, the Full Members Cup, the last proper inverted commas appearance at Wembley was 18 years prior. So City fans were climbing over themselves at the ticket office to get tickets. So I was lucky enough to go. I know you probably tweet a picture. I think I've sent you a picture or two of me, my old man, my grandpa at that game, all kitted out in the yellow and black kits. So like I said, I was lucky enough to go. It was one of my core memories of childhood. But the game was shit. The game was actually shit, despite all the build up, everything we'd been through to get there.
What was the build up like? And this is one thing I wanted to bring up, but I imagine even though City had trials and tribulations at that time, Gillingham were expected to be, obviously it's a final, it's a playoff final, it's going to be cagey, but 2-0, 3-0 victory for City, I imagine was probably the expectation heading into it.
I would absolutely imagine that's what the bookies were saying. For a number of reasons. Gillingham had only just snuck into the playoff places, for one. Two was, remember, City, only 2 years prior, 3 years prior, were in the Premier League. So we still had some top-tier players lingering around in the squad. The quality of the squad was different. City were coming off the back of an unbelievable 6 months, 5 months of form. Everything was stacked in City's favour. Everything was stacked in City's favour. But it's a cup final. We've seen it. Yeah, you, even recently, right? 2013 FA Cup final against Wigan. City had finished, I think we finished second that season. We'd won the title the year before. Wigan had been relegated. And Wigan beat us that day. So, you know, cup finals and Wembley, they do funny things, but yeah, like many cup finals, the game was quite drab. Two cagey sides, two teams that were shitting themselves. And up to the 81st minute, scoreless. Not much had happened. Then it happened. Now, obviously, I don't remember the feeling when it went in. The only thing I can imagine to kind of put myself in that, in those shoes, and that feeling of the ground wanting the ground to swallow you up, was when Mackie put QPR 2-1 up in 2012. It still goes through my head like PTSD, right? That diving header, the City defenders just kind of lost in the box. And it's like slow motion. You think it's over. It's all over. But this wasn't a case of first in the Premier League or second in the Premier League. This was potentially consigning City to a second successive season in the third tier after the long season that we've just been through to even get here to Wembley after turning that season around. So 81 minutes played, 1-0 Gillingham, Asaba. 87 minutes played, 2-0 Gillingham, Taylor. City fans were pouring out the ground. We'd completely fucked it. I want to bring in another quote as well from Wembley Way that day.
Yeah, this is interesting. So weirdly enough, we'll get to City goals, but four goals scored in the last 15 minutes of the game is pretty mad anyway. But City in the 87th minute go 2-0 down. Again, your father's had this to say. One of my claim to fame in life was being responsible for thousands of City fans running back into Wembley when Dickhoff scored the equaliser. Personally, I left the game at 2-0 down. In the concourse on the way out, we heard a cheer and word had spread that the original Kevin, more on him a little bit later on, had scored what was surely a consolation goal, Kevin Harlock, for anybody. In interested. We continue to exit the stadium along with hundreds of other Blues. A bleak silence upon us all. I love the way he's painted this, by the way. It's very emotive. Remember, it was 1999, so mobile phones were a rarity. I was fortunate to have one. We reach Wembley Way, and I'm thinking I'll give the missus a call to let her know that we've left and not to expect us home too late. She answers, and this is why the quotation marks start. I am like, fucking shit. I can't fucking believe it. Every other word is fucking followed by my disbelief. What was meant to be a certain win, a minute or two into the conversation, she says, wait a minute. He's scored. You've scored. Your dad shouts, we've scored. It's fucking 2-2. Wembley Way erupts. Literally every person there does a full 360 degree turn, sprints back into the ground. If you were on Wembley Way at that moment when City had been 2-0 down and brought it back to 2-2, Paul Dickoff with the equaliser in the end, I will still accept your gratitude 25 years later. I was the one with the mobile phone.
Mad.
Yeah,
absolutely funny. Mad. Anyone that tells you that they stayed in that ground at 2-0 down with 88 minutes gone is there's at least a 50% chance they're lying.
My dad, that was an important. I'll say that my dad stayed.
Did he?
Yeah, he
props
did.
To him. Props to him. But it was an important life lesson for me. Funny when we went 2-1 down against QPR about the 80th minute or so, my dad and my grandpa, who I was with. At Wembley in 99, yeah. I was getting the little nudge in the arm. Do you want to go? Kind of ticking on. We're talking 85, 86, 87. Do you want to go? And I literally, on my hands to heart, I turned around to my dad and I said, you did this at Gillingham. We're not moving.
Yeah.
A very important life lesson with City. And we learned it again a few years later with Villa. Mm. So yeah, madness. Young listeners, again, think Dzeko Aguero in 2012, think Rodri Gundogan in 2022, but this time later, pandemonium, typical City, two goals. You thought it was all over, all finished, 2-0. Kevin Horlock gets one back, Paul Dickoff gets two back. Fun fact, and the commentator that mentions this, if you go back and look at the Sky feed from the day, the Gillingham keeper was Vince Bartram, who was best friends with Dickoff and Paul Dickoff's best man at his wedding.
So, was that before or after he'd scored the equaliser in the 95th
This minute? Is all before. This was before. Wow. Dickoff and Bartram had been best friends for years, and Dickoff put that famous equaliser past Bartram.
The problem being this time around, though, it wasn't done. Equaliser goes in 95th minute. It's only 2-2.
Correct. City weren't the ruthless City of 2012 and 2022. It wasn't get the job done inside 90 minutes or inside 95 minutes. It went to pens. Mm. But again, extra time played out similarly to much of the game itself. It was cagey. The two teams, especially after what had just transpired, the two teams were very, very, very nervous. And not too much happened. So it goes to penalty shootout. City keeper that day is Nicky Weaver, who was only 20 years old. Yeah. He only retired, I think he was, oh my God, I say only, he retired about 10 years ago now, but he was playing football well into the 2010s. Yeah. He was a young lad in 99. He'd been an England youth keeper under 19s and under 21s, I think.
Mm-hmm. I've had the pleasure of working with the great man himself.
Have you?
Yeah, absolutely. He was just as wonderful as you'd imagine him to be, sort of having seen interviews and whatnot, absolute gent.
Yeah, he's supposed to. I've not met him since I was a kid in and around Carrington, but from what I know. From others like yourself. So he's meant to be an amazing guy, lovely fella. And he deserved it, what happened. So Weaver saved one of Gillingham's early pens. I think it was either the first or the second. And he saved the deciding pen again. But on the off chance anyone hasn't seen this, and I would expect that most people have at least seen the highlights from that day, but the old Wembley, it had the running track around it. Yeah. So there was a lot of space between the... I don't know if it's a running track or just asphalt, but there was a lot of space between the stands and the pitch. And Weaver lost his head. When he saved that pen to win it, Weaver lost his head. He jumped over the back of the advertising hoardings. He sprinted round and round and round the pitch. Until one of the lads tackled him, brought him down, and it was just an enormous pylon. And it was glorious. But everything between that shambolic relegation moment against Liverpool in 1996 to what had just happened was, it just encapsulated so much of typical City. It was, like I described it before, a banter era on steroids, but still not without its joy. You know, from the shambolic relegation, the last gasp run into the playoffs, the last gasp goals late on in the final after going behind and making it hard for ourselves. Personally, I think we can trace a lot of our current success back to that day. You know, if you believe in the butterfly effect, that one small moment can exponentially change the future.
As you've mentioned, that and this maybe is going one side of the spectrum, but City could have been out of business. But not even just a, oh, if that doesn't happen, this doesn't happen, this doesn't happen, blah, blah, blah. I think I can confidently say if Nicky Weaver doesn't save that penalty, if Paul Dickhoff doesn't score the equaliser, Kevin Hall gets the, you know, 2-1, whatever, City don't win the Premier League in 2011. They probably don't even get taken over in 2008. You know, that's not just sort of conspiracy. It's there's evidence to suggest that would be the case.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. It is really an exponential butterfly effect. You talk about two paths to go down, and that Dickhoff goal or that Weaver moment was the precipice of those two paths. Like, cause if you think, even in the couple of years after that promotion, only 4 years later in 2003, City move into the stadium that had been built for the Commonwealth Games. Would that have gone through? Would City have even survived? If City hadn't moved into that stadium or had survived, you know, if we'd survived on life support, would we have been a candidate for Taksin Shinawat or Sheikh Mansour as a viable Premier League club to take over? Probably not. No. And I think a lot of it, when you follow the path of the club's life back from where we are today to the decisions and the key defining moments in the club's history, going back, a lot of it for me centres on that day in 99. Because the difference then between ending up in League One or Division Two for another season and what came after versus what did happen and what came after, there are very, very, very few stories in football that are that drastic of a difference when you stand there and look at the two paths that Manchester City could have gone down.
Yeah, which is probably a wonderful place to call it a day. I know we've been talking a while, but it's a story worth telling and worth telling in detail. Maybe if the listeners enjoyed it, we could turn this into, I don't know, a little mini-series sort of going throughout the spring into the summer. Obviously, like I said, 25 years since it happened. For some of you, I guess you'll remember it like it was yesterday. So yeah, Ollie, I guess the only thing to say is thank you very much. I personally really enjoyed it. If the listeners didn't, sod them, but I'm sure they probably did.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Indeed. Listeners, let us know what you thought. And obviously another big shout out to the Chubby Northerner for that poem. We'll make sure to throw it in a couple more episodes. And especially if this turns into a mini series, consider this a pilot episode. If you want to see more, let us know. But like I said, we'll be turning attention to the actual football going on in the present day. God City chasing back-to-back trebles. Could you imagine if saying that at 87 minutes in at Wembley Stadium in 1999? Probably not. But yeah, we'll be speaking about that as we go on throughout the week. Until then, though, it's been a pleasure and we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.